Utica. Have you heard of the Bhagavad Gita before?
That was the first time. Bhagavad Gita is in Sanskrit, so we'll read it in Sanskrit. You all know Sanskrit, don't you? Everyone's supposed to know Sanskrit.
Is Sanskrit a dead language, or they still speak it?
Not for me.
Not to you. I was just wondering.
No, some people speak. It's not the most popular language. Uh-huh. In India, some people still speak Sanskrit.
Oh, okay.
And here we speak Sanskrit too, but not a whole lot. We translated those. So Bhagavad is a book which is actually part of a greater literature called the Mahabharata, which is bigger than the Iliad and the Odyssey combined.
Wow.
And it was spoken, well, the Mahabharata was written by a sage called Śrīla Vyāsadeva. And part of that Mahabharata is this Bhagavad Gita. It's a conversation between two warriors on a battlefield, Krishna and Arjuna. And Krishna is giving Arjuna very important advice how to succeed in life. Everyone wants to succeed in life, but most people don't really know what real success is. Because ultimately, success is three things. One of them is that we want to be peaceful. We want to feel secure. Isn't that right? Anyone here would like to feel secure? Oh, you've come to the wrong country. But if we base our security upon this temporary body, it's not possible to feel secure. Because one thing about the body, it does keep on changing. Even if you go to school and get your degree, your body still keeps on changing. Is that right?
Yes.
Even people with PhD degrees, their bodies keep on changing too. So, because the body changes, and what's the final change that the body goes through? Yeah, so that's one thing we all have in common. We all die. At least the body dies. So that's not very good news, is it? We didn't want to depress anyone. But the good news in Bhagavad Gita is that we ourselves, we won't die. Because there's a difference between ourselves and the body. So that's rather a unusual revelation, because no one has ever, I've never been to a university where that's being taught. Although that's the most essential knowledge for everyone to learn, but somehow or another, even if you go to the best university, you won't be taught the difference between yourself and your body. Now Krishna begins Bhagavad Gita with that explanation. In the very first pages of Bhagavad Gita, you'll learn more than you'll learn in 4 years of college. And it doesn't cost anything. Well, it costs, if you want to buy a Bhagavad Gita, it's $15. But that's a, that's a lot cheaper than the university will charge you for your 4-year course. But here, Krishna says something very important, and we'll say in Sanskrit because it's so important. And then we'll translate it because it's even more, it's more important to translate it. But deno svinita dehe komaram yovanam jara tita dehantara praptir. So what Lord Krishna is saying is that our bodies are changing. They go from boyhood to youth to old age. So everyone can agree with that, isn't that right? No one's going to disagree. My body's not changing. I have exactly the same body I had in the womb of my mother. It's just a little bigger, that's all. But it hasn't changed at all. Because if you can figure out that logic, then you'll understand that you'll be able to hear the sound of one hand clapping. But obviously, if the body we had in the womb of our mother is obviously not the same body we have now. But then Krishna says that although the body goes through so many different changes, that we, the self within the body, the person who's aware of all these changes, we're not changing. Now, what we're aware of is multidimensional in the sense that it's not just the body that changes, it's our mind that changes also. Ever have noticed that your mind sometimes changes? Our mind is changing and our perspective on life is changing. When we're a little baby, we have a certain perspective. And when we have a middle-aged body, we have a certain perspective. And when we get an old body, we get the same perspective we had when we were a little child. So it's always changing. And even our personality is changing. But the observer of all this is not changing. The person who's conscious of the personality, of the perspective of life, of the thinking, feeling, willing, the gross and subtle bodies, is always the same. The observer is the same. Therefore, we observe and experience a baby body, and we're observing and experiencing this present body. Sometimes we say the experience is pleasant, sometimes we say it's unpleasant, and generally it's a mixture of both. In any case, the observer is actually what we're talking about when we talk about our actual self. But we're not really aware of ourselves. We're aware of the drama that's going on outside of ourself right now. The whole temporary drama that we're in because of our identification with this body and our fear and anxiety that we might die. But guess what? The body dies anyhow. No matter how nicely we take care of it, somehow or another it grows older and older. Even if we brush our teeth every day. One day the body will get old enough that we'll have to leave it. But the good thing is that according to Bhagavad Gita, we get another body, either spiritual or material. That is, our actual self, we can live without a material body. Or if we, according to how we use this body, we get another body. So this is actual knowledge. Except for this knowledge, everything else is rather external. We may deal with how the body works, which is necessary. We're not denying, because we have, for some period of time, we're going to have to live in this body. And therefore, while we live in the body, we have to take care of the body. Just like we know we're not the car. We hope we know we're not the car. Someone's speaking to me. Excuse me. This is the first time this ever happened. Voice control. What does voice control mean?
I mean, the button might have been pressed.
Just like we have a car in Sanskrit, when people identify with a car, they call it a hum car. I am the car. So identifying ourselves with a car, if someone hits our car, we get out of the car and we exclaim, "You've hit my car." But actually, they haven't hit your car. You, actually they don't say, "You hit me." But actually they haven't hit you, they hit your car. Similarly, because of our misidentification with this body, we think that when the body goes through some change, that we're going through some change. And therefore we're living in a great drama, mainly just to protect our body, to make sure that we can grow up so we can get a good job, so we can work hard, so we can have a nice retirement, so we can play checkers. And then we can check into the best hospital and we can put the best tubes in every orifice in our body so we can check out scientifically. So everyone's struggling hard, trying to go to school, get a good job, so that they can die in a nice hospital. But that's not the aim of life. The actual aim of life is to discover who we actually are. Why? Because if we discover who we actually are, one thing we won't have is fear. We won't have anxiety and fear anymore, which is basically what everyone's struggling so hard to acquire. But they're doing it in relationship to this temporary body. And no matter how much money you have, no matter how many buildings and servants and cars, and how many rings and dresses and televisions and whatever, followers on Facebook, you may have a zillion followers on Facebook. But still your body's going to change. It's going to grow old, get disease, and then we have to leave it. So all this endeavor to protect the body is just a waste of time, actually. Although we may have to utilize it for some purpose, and therefore we may have to brush our teeth and take rest and take our vitamin pills and everything else, so the body at least becomes less inconvenient than it already is. But that will not prevent the body from growing old, becoming diseased, and then dying, nor will it prevent us from taking another body. Just like we ourselves are not influenced by the changes of the body, although we're experiencing the changes of the body, but it doesn't change us, it changes our experience. So similarly, before we had this body, we've had so many other bodies. And after this body, if we get a spiritual body, then we'll just, if we wake up again into our spiritual body, then we won't get any more material bodies. But as long as we're attached to this material existence, we'll have to take one body after another. Any questions about that so far? What do you think? Do you believe that, what I'm saying? What do you think?
That's true. Yeah.
And yourself?
Our spiritual body?
Yeah.
Interesting hearing other people's perspective of it. So
what's that?
It's interesting hearing your perspective of it.
Right, that we have a... Yeah. We're persons. Right now we're a person. We all have our individual identities. And we're all eternal. So that's one thing we all have in common. Although we have a different body right now. And that's to be expected because we have different desires. According to the desires we have, there we get different bodies. Now this is all being arranged, of course, not by accident. The planets don't move in their orbits by accident. The sun rises at a certain time, and the sun sets at a certain time. Now, the scientists say it's all by accident. So if they understood it was an accident, then they should explain how this accident came about. Even you go on the street, and two cars, they crash into each other. The police come. They say, what happened? And the witnesses, they say, oh, don't worry about it. It was just an accident. There's nothing to explain it. It was accident. No, even accidents have an explanation. Therefore, the police will be interested in finding out how this so-called accident took place. Just like they had a train that derailed in New York. And they didn't say, oh, don't worry about it. It was just an accident. No, they found out that the driver fell asleep. That's why they had an accident. So similarly, how can it be just an accident that every day the sun comes out at a certain time and every day the sun goes out at a certain time? And intelligent people, intelligent engineers, manufacturers, they make watches trying to duplicate the exact movements of the sun, but they're not able to make a watch that's going to last for millions of years like the sun does. So the scientists say, well, don't worry about it, just an accident. Don't think. Actually, that's what they say. We'll do all the thinking for you. Don't really look into this too deeply, because you might discover there might be a person behind the sun, and that would spoil our whole attempt to make ourselves to be the supreme. And then besides that, if there's a God, you won't pay us anymore. We'll be unemployed. So that wouldn't be very good. So better forget about any intelligent person who's having the sun come up a certain time, having the sun go down at a certain time. Not only this one sun, but there are unlimited planets, practically speaking, and they're all moving in an orbit. At least the ones that we can observe, like the moon, Mercury, Mars, Venus, Saturn, they're all moving in an orbit, and scientists can discern where the sun's going to be in a million years from now. We don't know where we're going to be tomorrow. With all our intelligence, we can't be so sure what's going to happen to us tomorrow, but they can tell us what's going to happen to the sun, because it's all being governed by some intelligence, by an organized mind who's supremely powerful, who's able to move something as great as the sun around. Therefore, that same person, he's organized the universe, and therefore it's not by accident that one person gets one body and another person gets another body. And there are not only human bodies, if we probably have noticed, that there are also tree bodies. There are squirrel bodies. And in Dallas, there's a lot of dog bodies. As well as ant bodies and other plant bodies. There are so many different bodies. And although we may think we're the only living entities on this planet, but actually these bodies, whether dog body or a cow body or plant body, they also have a spiritual soul just like we are. They're also conscious. But they just have a different type of body. But the difference is that we can understand, if we have enough intelligence, the difference between ourselves and the body. While in the lower species of life, although the soul is situated in a material body, they don't have sufficient intelligence to understand I'm actually not a dog. If you go to a dog and it keeps on barking, you say, calm down, take it easy. Things aren't so bad as you think. You're actually not that body. You're a spiritual soul. The dog will say, oh, thank you very much. I was getting a little nervous here. That's why he's barking. Please forgive me. I think I'll retire from barking for a while. No, the dog will not be able to understand the difference between its body and the soul itself, because the consciousness in the dog body of the soul has not been developed enough. Just like when a baby is born, it's the same soul, but the consciousness is not very developed. And therefore you may explain Bhagavad Gita to a baby, but it'll just go, goo, 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 goo. The same, because its consciousness is not developed. But in human form of life, when our consciousness develops, we're able to understand the difference between our body and our soul. And we can understand, if we're given the proper guidance, about the supreme existence as a supreme soul, a supreme intelligence. Now that supreme soul, of course, he has a very bad reputation nowadays. No one's really, most people are not supporting him very much. Most people say he's dead. Because if he was dead, that if you go to a doctor, I mean, on what basis did they say that God is dead? Just like if you go to a doctor and he takes your pulse, and he says it's normal. He takes your heartbeat, and he says it's normal. He takes your brain waves, and he says it's all normal. And then you ask the doctor, my dear doctor, after all this investigation, what is your conclusion? So he said, well, everything seems normal, but I still think you're dead. So you wonder, on what basis has the doctor made the conclusion that I'm dead if everything's normal? What happens, you know? So therefore, in the same way, we find that the planets are moving their orbits exactly on time, snowflakes are falling in precise geometric patterns, no two snowflakes are being identical. We're eating food, it's being digested, part of it is being assimilated, the unnecessary parts are being eliminated. So many wonderful things are going on, and yet we say it's all going on by accident, and that however this creation has come about, if there was a creator, now he's dead. So this is all just enviousness. That's why we came to the material world, because we're envious. We want to be the best, and if there's a God who's characteristically or categorically the most beautiful, the strongest, the most intelligent, the most powerful, the most renounced, the most famous, then all our fame, all our power, all our intelligence, all our everything our renunciation, it's all kind of insignificant. But we've come here because we want to be artificially significant, more significant than we really are. And therefore we're competing against each other on the false premise that I have a body which is better than yours. I have a bigger body. I had a better result on the test. I'm stronger than you are, etc. I'm more famous than you are. Therefore, I'm a good person. And you're not. I'm a better person than you. I'm God. But actually, compared to God, everyone is completely insignificant. The most intelligent person here in this universe is insignificant compared to the Supreme Person. And it'll always be like that, no matter how much we study, no matter how many vitamins we take, and how many times we brush our teeth, compared to the Supreme Person, we'll always be infinitesimal, and he'll always be infinite. So if we can accept that, then we can begin to understand about the Supreme Person. Then we won't spend our whole lives trying to deny him and trying to compete with each other, trying to become better in some way than everyone else. I have more butterflies in my collection than you have, and therefore I'm better than you are. I'm the president of the butterfly collector in Dallas. Therefore, I'm a good person and you're not. So this is all some kind, we call that subtle sense gratification. But it actually doesn't lead one to the actual understanding of our real selves, nor will we be able to understand about the existence of the Supreme Self if we categorically deny his existence just because we don't like the fact that he might exist. If you ask a scientist, can you give me scientific proof of the non-existence of God, they can't do that because everything points to intelligent design, for instance. When Darwin made his so-called investigations and reached the conclusion that everything has evolved out of, you know, something, out of practically nothing, he did so on the basis that the basic building blocks of the universe, of the body, were very simple. But when the scientists looked into the cell, the actual building blocks of the body, they found out each cell, with its process of creating energy, process of assimilating that energy, the process of eliminating the waste products, the disposal units in every cell, of which there's trillions in the body, each cell is more complicated than all of New York City. And there are millions being created every second and millions being destroyed every second. Therefore, this idea that the universe is the most basic building blocks are very simple was incorrect. Actually, the most basic building blocks are more complicated than any scientist can even imagine. Let one scientist create out of nothing, even one cell. Let them create one atom out of nothing. They can't do anything. They can't create anything. They can take the energy that's there and somewhat manipulate it with whatever intelligence they have and create something worse than's already there. Right. And take credit for it. The best, you know, and then they say that we're actually God. But let them create one blade of grass. They can't even do that. They can take a blade of grass and turn it to yellow or blue or green and claim now we're God. But God has created billions of blades, trillions, quadrillions of blades of grass. But no one gives him any credit because that's not why we came here. We came here to discredit. But if we want to better our lives, we want to get out of our present illusion of misidentifying ourselves with this body, then at least the first thing we should be is a little honest, a little open to reality, rather than basically denying reality, and therefore having to accept our identity as a temporary material body, and life is just a struggle against the universe, and that ultimately we're all going to be defeated anyhow. So just do whatever you can and enjoy in this temporary world, and at the end everything is zero. But it's not zero. All these blades of grass, all these animals, all these mosquitoes, all these birds, they had a human form of life at one time, and they also went to universities, and they also studied. And at the end of their studies, at the end of their lives, they became a blade of grass. So.
Sounds peaceful.
Unless someone steps on you. Of course, if you become a blade of grass, you don't have to pay for tuition anymore. So, as its advantages. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Are you doing a paper on the Hare Krishna movement?
Yes. Well, it's like on multicultural, so I was just researching a little bit about it.
Okay. Did you find out anything?
I was just looking more like at your traditions for this, the temple. And
did you know we had a philosophy too?
I mean, I figured. I just didn't know much about it.
You know, we also believe that the Supreme Person, he's the most attractive person. He has inconceivable, unlimited beauty. He has inconceivable, unlimited knowledge and strength and fame and renunciation and wealth. Therefore, he's the most attractive person. He's more attractive than Mr. or Mrs. Universe. Multi-universe. That's why we're worshiping him. And in our books is a full description about God. Everything is there except for his email. And he has a Facebook page, though, so maybe it's on there. Yes.
When you can correct me, of course, but When it's told to me that Krishna had, per se, 18,600 wives.
16,000.
16,000, thank you. How was he able to be with every one of them as though he was with the one? I mean, what was he?
How does he do it? You'll have to ask him.
Oh, okay.
That's what God means. Not only is he with 16,108 wives, but he's in everyone's heart simultaneously. What to speak of 16,000? He's in unlimited living entities' hearts at the same time. And he never gets confused.
Wow.
That's why he's God.
Yeah.
Because after all, if there wasn't a Supreme Person in our heart, then where is our remembrances coming from? Because sometimes we want to remember something, we can't. So who's actually supplying us with remembrance and forgetfulness and our perspective on life, which is always changing? So someone's providing, supplying these things to all living entities. So Krishna knows exactly what he's doing all the time. So what to speak of 16,108 queens, he's with every living entity. 16,108 is nothing for Krishna.
One is plenty for me.
Yeah. One is usually too much for most people. Anything else? So we have our books here. So if anyone wants to get one of our, yes, you have a question.
I was actually wondering about the instrument you're playing that you were playing at the very beginning. I've never seen an instrument.
I was wondering about it myself. It's called a harmonium. It actually comes from the Muslim tradition, but it was adopted into the Indian musical system at some time. It's just like a piano, but it's made with reeds.
Made with reeds?
Yeah, it's reeds. It's just like a...
Mm-hmm. It doesn't need electricity, right? You provide the...
Yeah, we provide the electricity.
You provide the energy. You provide that's, the power.
Yeah, we go move it back and forth like a bellow, like an accordion.
Uh-huh. It's called a harmonium.
Harmonium.
Harmonium. Okay. I was wondering about it, too. And I've seen it several times.
They have more traditional instruments than this, but this is easy to play. They have also, in India, they have sitar and yesaraj and things, but that would be a little esoteric. This is more traditional also. This is called mridanga.
The drum is called a redunda?
Yeah, redunda. Usually it's made out of clay, but it breaks easily, so we made it out of plastic.
Wasn't it ever made out of like gourds?
That's more or less like a tambura.
Okay. Or
a sitar. Those are easy to make because they grow a lot of vegetables in India.
Right.